Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
There's a lot of punishments parents can dole out to their kids for misbehaving. You know, stay in your room, stand in the corner, lock them in a coffin.
Yeah, that's going to leave a permanent scar on your psyche, I guarantee it.
That's something we deal with today on My Crazy Family.
My. Crazy.
Crazy.
Family.
Family.
My.
Crazy.
Family.
Welcome to the program. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. You don't miss any episodes of our show. And share your story with us. That's what we love. That fuels the show, literally. You can write in at crazyfampod.com anonymously, crazyfampod.com, or you can call in at 833-CRAY-FAM and share your story with us, and I will disguise your voice upon request. You've got a chance for you to win a $500 Amazon gift card, correct?
Yes. All you have to do is go and give us a review. Preferably a good review would be nice, and then send us a screenshot of that review to contest at crazyfampod.com. And you can do it at Apple Podcasts. You can do it on social media. You can do it wherever you listen to your podcast. Just take a screenshot of it and send it to us again at contest@crazyfampod.com.
We'll be giving out that $500 gift card closer to the holidays. So please do sign up and leave that review. We greatly, greatly appreciate that. Tony and Stacy Cole with you on today's episode of the program. What's up?
Oh, goodness. Our stories today, I've got some stories that kind of go along with the stories that we have. So it's nice to know that I'm not alone in some of the craziness that I grew up in, which is kind of the reason we're doing the podcast in the first place. So people don't feel like they're the only ones.
You know, I found the show to be very therapeutic.
Yeah, me too. And it's like, I don't need therapy anymore. So I'm saving $100 a week. I appreciate it.
It's like one of those things where, you know, I knew I had some stories. I really did have a fairly calm family. I don't really have one that I like, oh my God, you won't believe this. But there's just a lot of, you know, things that go on within a family, little idiosyncrasies and things that just don't make any sense and things that are kind of crazy that you kind of brush over and you don't really realize. So you start talking about them years later, and then you realize all the trauma that your family put you through, and you never speak to them again. No, I'm kidding, but yeah, that's it's very interesting. So, what do we got this week here?
We've got a couple of very short stories, but they're very big stories, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Our first one: my mom was raised in a funeral home. Her dad used to lock her in coffins inside the morgue when she was bad. She hasn't talked to them in a while. Holy shit. That's the story.
That's the story.
But yeah, that's the story. And that's a huge story, even though it's like the shortest one we've ever received. It's the biggest story I think we've had in a long time.
That's like totally traumatic. That's the thing of nightmares.
Yes.
Have you ever had a nightmare where you were in a coffin?
Oh, yes. When I worked in radio, I was in coffins all the time in my dreams. I shit you not.
What was the correlation there? You're in, like, because you're stuck. Like, this is what
I was trapped.
Yeah.
I was absolutely trapped. And don't get me wrong, I adored radio. I loved my partner. Mm-hmm. I still do. I talk to him every day.
Yeah.
Talk to him today, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. I adored my partner. I didn't care for the shit that went on after our show.
Sure.
And I was in radio for 18 to 20 years.
Yep.
Loved it, every second of it. But there were parts of it where I felt like it was trying to kill me and suffocate me. Mm-hmm. And anybody in radio would tell you the same story.
Yeah.
I almost guarantee it. So at night, it would manifest itself in, I either had dreams that I was flying and I was the pilot. I was in a plane a lot of times, and the plane was going under bridges and getting its wings clipped, and then it would just tumble and explode. Or I was inside a coffin.
Wow. I never had the airplane dream, but I did have when I look back, I did have coffin dreams quite a bit in radio.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say I've had them for a long time, but now, if I were to go to, you know, dream meaning this, I would be looking at the plane thing as saying, well, you know, you're flying, you're doing a good job. And then they ask you, let's do something exciting. Let's really, you know, get the audience excited about some sort of stunt or something. Yes. That you did, because that's what radio is. And then when you do that stunt, like they ask and they look at you and go, well, we never said to do that. That was too much. That was too far. And then you crash and burn. And that's how radio fucking works. Did back when they employed people. And the coffin, I totally get as being you're stuck.
You're stuck.
It really was. It was a weird thing. Like, you could be at the top of your game in that industry, but it didn't necessarily translate into anything else.
No. When I was on the morning show, we were at the top of our game in our market. We were absolutely doing the best. And then you would leave the studio after just an amazing show, and your program director would come at you basically with a pitchfork and tell you how awful you were. Yeah. And I would go out in my car and just cry the entire way home. And I only live like 4 minutes from the station. And I would be almost so hysterical that I was like, you know, doing that by the time I pulled into my driveway.
Sure. Sure.
You know, and it just was this roller coaster of, oh my God, this was the best show we've ever done, to, oh my God, I am just the worst. I have no talent.
Yeah.
They're going to fire me. It was this roller coaster that your brain had to work through. And a lot of times I was dreaming at night that I was dying and I was trapped and I was being suffocated and just horrific things. And I remember I did go to counseling, because I would just wake up with these night terrors where I'm screaming bloody murder, and my neighbors thought something was horribly wrong. And the therapist is like, you are living a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
You live it when you're sleeping and you live it when you're awake. You need to figure something out. And I'm like, yeah, no shit.
And one of the weird things about it, like front facing everybody, you know, you walk into the grocery store, hey, it's Stacy. Because you guys were household names in that town. Yep. And people knew you. And then they think everything's wonderful because it's a great show and everything. It was good on the outside. But on the inside, it was utter fucking chaos. But
It was very demeaning at times. And it was most often the program directors who were, I don't know if they were told to be awful human beings or if that's just what they were.
I think some just were.
I can think of two of them that were just absolutely horrific. One of them, you know, one of them you don't. And they both were equally horrible. And if I saw them on the street right now and I were driving, it would take everything in my power to not try to run them over. I'm not joking.
There was there was one that we had together that I remember. This is early 2000s. And the situation at work, there was message boards. Back when people participated in message boards on topics.
Yeah.
This is pre-social media. And he got such a kick out of getting our staff insulted on there. And we would get ripped apart left and right all the time by other radio people, supposedly. But he would go out of his way to, like, and I think it was him sometimes, honestly, under a fake pseudonym.
Oh, I guarantee it.
Insulting you specifically. Yep. And I remember how much that would affect you. And I affected me too. It totally killed my self-esteem because I was working my ass off and thought I was doing good. But we got targeted a lot by them. And it was always just rip you apart and this and that. And it's like, where the fuck is this coming from?
I bet it was him. Because he totally would get a hard on.
Yeah.
Telling us about it.
I remember him telling me, you know, like, I want to get there. And it's like, you're a fucking sick person. But I totally remember that. But anyway, back to the coffin. The idea of being locked in a coffin as a punishment, that I think would take its fucking toll on someone as I don't know how you really get over that one. That would be a fear. I think almost a fear of almost laying in bed because it's a similar type thing. I don't know how you would really kind of deal with that. And why the fuck would you get locked in a coffin? That's fucked up.
That's pretty sadistic and not realizing what it symbolizes. You know, it's one thing to, you need to go to your room and I don't want you to come out until you've thought about what you've done, but to actually put somebody into a box and shut it. And that box symbolizes death and closure and, you know, permanence. Yeah. That's the symbolism is just horrific there.
Yeah. I remember having a dream once of the dream. I don't know exactly how it started, but what I remember is I'm laying in the coffin. It's totally dark. I can't see anything, but I think the funeral or the thing at the graveyard just ended, and I can feel myself being lowered down, and then I can start to hear like dirt being dumped on top of it.
Oh,
and it was very realistic, and I'm laying there like, I'm alive. Like I'm not dead and nobody can hear me. And it was just so scary. The thing is that shit used to happen. For whom the bell tolls, the old saying, that means, if you're in a graveyard, they used to actually put a string down into the coffin and they put a bell above ground. And if you were alive and you came out of whatever they thought you were dead with, you could ring the bell.
And if they heard the bell, they needed to dig you back up so that you could live.
Yeah, exactly. Because there wasn't, you know, there's many times where people can present as dead pretty good, but you know, they'd have modern medical equipment. So they just thought the person's dead. So that should actually happen quite a bit. I wonder how many people got buried alive and that's how they went because they just,
I imagine
dead.
Quite a bit. And I wonder if somebody dug their way out and that's why they went, you know, we need to have a system in place in case we do bury somebody who's not dead.
I don't know how you would dig your way out. Would it all just kind of collapse on you? I mean,
you would think, but you know, some people are really resilient and maybe they just clawed their way out because why were they thinking they needed to bury somebody with a bell?
That's, you know, these are things I contemplated as a child in church. Because I was so bored. So I'd say some of my craziest ideas or things that I'd contemplate were sitting in that pew, just being bored out of my mind and thinking, well, if you did that, I suppose you could keep like kind of a little chamber where the dirt isn't. And if you keep digging down and keep pushing it that way, and if you're just right about it, you probably could dig yourself out without suffocating. But that's a lot of work with not a lot of air either. So,
and you'd have to work quickly. So you couldn't be really close to death because you'd need some strength.
You kind of have to catch that you were dead pretty quick.
Right.
And start doing it. Otherwise, you're just going to lay there and because the oxygen's got to not last very long. Gosh, how many? Yeah, that would just be horrific. Like you exhume a body and then you see claw marks on the inside of the casket.
Well, Twilight Zone had an episode like that as well. And I remember that stayed with me for many years where somebody was trying to get out. Absolutely. Yeah, it was just horrific. That's the kind of stuff that if I can't sleep at night, I'm thinking about shit like that.
Yeah. Well, I feel for that person that had to be locked in caskets. It's one thing if you're like, lay down for a second, let's just see what it's like. I'll unlock it as a game or just like, let's just see what it feels like. Because I'd probably ask to do that if my dad was the owner of a funeral home and we had caskets. I'd be like, just lock me in for a second. I just
want to see what it feels like.
Yeah. But if you're like, you didn't eat your dinner. It's time for the casket. That's fucked up. That's very fucked up. So I feel for
you. You're going to be in counseling for a long fucking time.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that. There's nothing that our podcast can do to help you. You're just fucked.
No, I'm kidding. Sorry. And we're not laughing at you. This is just awful. Oh, awful.
That is horrible. Right.
The next story is very similar to this, and it has to do with a family that was in the funeral home business. And a lot of times funeral homes, at least in the older times, they were actually connected to a home.
Yeah.
It was like a family business. And it said, we had one of those large horizontal freezer, like normal ones. I'm not talking about anything dead body related. Well, there was no room in the apartment on top of the business, the funeral home. So they kept it in the basement in a utility room. The utility room was beside the embalming room. I was the only kid in our family scared of bodies. So they would try to force me to get over my fear by forcing me to go down to the frozen to get the frozen steak or pork chops. I literally sprint down flights of stairs and back up, absolutely terrified. I think I had PTSD from stuff like that for years. I remember when I was a kid, this was when I lived in South Dakota for a very short time as a child. I was friends with somebody who their family ran like the only funeral home in town.
Yeah.
And she had a sleepover there.
Oh God.
It was terrifying. We couldn't sleep. Like none of the kids could sleep. The gal who hosted the sleepover, she was fine. The rest of us were like sitting up, you know, wide awake. We are in the house part of the building,
yeah,
but right next door is the funeral home.
Did anybody were ghost stories told? Did anybody dare anybody to walk into the funeral part for a minute or walk to the caskets or anything of that nature?
No, we didn't go into it. And I don't know that anybody even tried to go over there, but it was so creepy that I think that's the only sleepover that she ever had.
Yeah.
And none of us ever came back. Like we were still friends with her and she'd try to invite us over and we're like, nope, 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 not doing that.
Yeah.
It was just too much.
I remember as a kid going to funerals and there was this one funeral home, and I think it still exists to this day, where, you know, the parents are doing their thing and we're kids. So we're not, we knew someone died, but it's usually like some distant relative that we really didn't know very well. So we're just there like, hey, everybody gets together. It's like Christmas. It's cousins I haven't seen for, you know, since Christmas. And we'd run around and be playing and stuff, and we'd always dare each other. There was this big staircase that went down to the basement of the funeral home, which is where they stored the caskets. And I imagine embalming is down there too somewhere.
Oh, sure.
It was like the showroom of the caskets. So not, you know, spooky with the lights on, other than it's a room full of caskets and carpet on the walls, but it was very spooky with the lights out. So we would dare each other, who can go furthest into the basement? And then the funeral home, the funeral directors, you know, they'd catch us like, kids, don't go down there. And they were always kind of creepy looking too. And of course, we would eventually end up trying to sneak back down there. Nobody ever got very far. I don't think anybody even got to the bottom of the staircase because it was like a landing and then another turn of the stairs. But it was creepy as shit. But we would always dare, who can get closest to the caskets? We weren't really scared about the bodies that were upstairs. I remember even one where there was two funerals going on at the same time in the two separate viewing rooms. And I remember going to the other room just to check out what the other dead body looked like.
Oh, God, you crashed a funeral.
It's like, who's dead over here?
Oh, Tony. That explains a lot.
I didn't go through the line, though, where I like said my condolences to everybody. It was kind of like when they were almost done, like, let's go see what that body looks like.
You just popped in the room to see if they had better snacks.
Popped in to check it out. Well, I mean, and two, prior to this even, prior to there being funeral homes where, yes, someone lives there, they're the curator of the place, and then next in the other part of the house is the actual funeral home. These things were done in the house, in anyone's home, which is why we have living rooms. Living rooms where it was the bigger room in the house, and it was called living because it was for the living to view the dead. That's where you would put the dead body and you would have your ceremony or whatever you're going to have in the living room. The living room.
Are you serious? I did not know this.
The purpose of the name living room is 100% to do with having a body in the room. So every time you think of living room now, that's what it means. It's a reference to the dead.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. The more you know.
Wow.
Dun, dun. So people, you know, they change the names of rooms. It's the great room. It's the family room. It's the, you know, something that doesn't necessarily imply this is where we store the body when Aunt Mildred dies. So there you go.
Wow.
Why I have this knowledge, I don't know, but probably from doing the ghost show.
I imagine. Yeah. Yikes.
Yeah. All right.
Wow. I got the creeps.
Moving on.
Okay. Our next one. My mom has never worked and is really involved with me and my sister. We call her the hovercraft. once when I was 17, I got into a bad car accident. I was okay and able to call my mom, but my sister was unconscious and her head was bleeding. I called my mom since we were only a mile from the house. I was really, really worried. Here's how our phone conversation went. Mom, me and Chuck were in a car accident. Her head is bleeding and she's unconscious. Mom says, honey, it's Chuck and I. When you say me and Chuck, people will think you're poor and you're not from a good family. So mom's trying to correct grammar while you're in a fucking car accident. Oh my God.
What is that? What is wrong with mom? What's the disorder that's flowing through mom's veins that allows her to do that and not have any perspective as to the current situation?
Exactly. Like, you need to be worried that people might think you're poor and not from a good family instead of, oh my God, is Chuck okay? And Chuck was the name of this person's sister. It's an interesting nickname. So you need to be like really concerned with how Chuck is doing at this moment.
I'm going to go with narcissist mother on that.
I would too.
Because those people are very concerned with image, especially the image that the children present, because they view it as 100% and not a reflection, an extension of them.
Yes.
They don't necessarily view the individual as an individual. They view that that person is an arm of them, quite literally. And if that arm is not doing what they think should be done or saying what should be said, they get very upset. And the fact that they bring up that they'll view you as being poor and not from another family, or from being from a lower income family, very narcissist, very much, I don't want that image of me. Never mind, you were just in a car accident. Right? People could be injured
and your head's
or dead.
Bleeding and you're unconscious.
It's more so, how is this going to reflect on me?
Yeah.
So that's what I would go with there. That's a scary thing with narcissists. And that's something to understand about that behavior, because people get baffled by this so often. I've read so many books on this topic. I feel like I'm fairly educated on it. And like, it fascinates me. It fascinates me that people can function in these ways. And what's scary about it is there's not really a cure for this. There ain't a pill you can take. There's not a lot of therapy that really reverses this way of thinking. As with any sort of disorder, the individual needs to recognize they have it first to get better from it. But because of the nature of what it is, they don't believe anything's ever wrong with them. So the madness just knows no length of what it can go to. So seeing something like that is very, very telling. I'd be curious as to what else childhood was like for that individual with the mother that has the audacity or just lack of sense to say something like that.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think there's probably a gazillion stories from this family, that it's not just the car accident story, that if they were to sit back and look at all of their interactions, they're probably quite bizarre.
And when you're a kid, it seems normal. Like, this is how people act. This is, oh, that's what you do. And then a lot of times individuals then take those traits on themselves because that's what they were trained. That's how people act, supposedly. And you suddenly, hopefully, realize sometimes that I'm not going to go down that road as well. Wow. There you go. That's exciting with the car accident there.
Just insane. Our next story. My husband just received the latest crazy gift from his mom. It was a winter hat, along with a letter explaining that she knitted it herself and was thinking about him the whole time she made it. Apparently, she knitted it with lots of love. She hopes that he'll wear it and think of her and how much she loves him and how much he means to her. She wishes that he would visit more, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. It's just a shame that she forgot to cut out the Made in China label inside the hat.
Now, why? I don't understand. I mean, I guess that's another narcissist thing where you want to make sure that the people are thinking of you. And you will go to any lengths to make you the center of the world, and you'll say anything. And if you think you're not going to get caught, it's just boom. Yeah, that's the path. That's what we're going to do no matter what. but then you miss some of those things and you get caught in it. And then people like that tend to just never discuss it, or they disappear for a while. And then hopefully everything is smoothed over. And why would you bring that up again? Because it's kind of fucked up. Like, just admit to it, you know, and you can laugh about it and move on as normal people would do. But I think something like this would not necessarily end in that fashion.
It's just, you know, and it sounds like it's a bit of a power play too, that, you know, I need to give this hat to my son and make sure that I'm still part of his life and that he knows that I spent hours working on this, even though I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I just need to exert myself over my son still. So it's like, it's the crazy mother-in-law, but it's the crazy mom.
Yeah.
It reminds me, I worked with somebody. She means well, excuse me, but she gave us a Christmas gift of some glass blown ornaments, mm-hmm. and made a big production out of how they were handmade in the Northwoods of Wisconsin. And, you know, that was really sweet of her to do. And we opened up the gifts and they're beautiful ornaments. But on one of them, which is just like it's a set, on one of them was a Made in China sticker. And I just, it's just been this joke because I remember the story about how these were handmade, hand-blown by some old man up in the Northwoods.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you mean in China? You know, and I never told her that I saw that.
Yeah.
But it was clearly on there from the factory.
So you never addressed this with the individual?
I did not, but my husband and I, we kept that ornament. We've got like one left. They're glass blown ornaments, and we have cats, and the cats like to mess with the tree, and so they've fallen and broken.
Yeah.
But we've kept one, and we put it up high because it always makes us chuckle.
Yeah.
So if you're gonna pull shit like that, make sure there's not a Made in China label or sticker adhered to it. If you're gonna come up with a big story. And I'm not saying that she came up with a story.
Yeah.
I don't, she's not a liar. Somebody along the way must have told her this story about these ornaments and that they were very expensive because they were handmade, whatever.
Sure.
But yeah, if you're going to pull shit like this, check for stickers.
Yeah. People will tell you shit to sell you shit. And
yeah, exactly.
And if you're gullible, or if you're not even gullible, sometimes you're just trusting and someone is very well versed in bullshitting people,
right?
It's not hard. You could pull that off, and say, Mr. Lynch, he's up here in Northern. He lives in a cabin. Out, there's no electricity, no power. The winters are really rough for him to stay warm. He whittles and then he blows glass, and the glass blowing glass is what keeps him warm. And at night he goes and he hunts for squirrels and he eats the squirrels. And that's the only source of protein. He drinks snow and he makes these ornaments, and he only makes 20 of them a year. And these are two of the 20. It's amazing. And you could believe it because it's quite a story. And like, who the fuck would make that up? The person who wants to sell ornaments will make that shit up.
Exactly.
And then you believe it, and it's such a grand tale. And you almost at that point, I think after buying it and you heard the tale and you were duped into it, you'd almost keep telling the story, even if you realized it was false, just because it was such a good story.
Absolutely. And I can totally see that. I remember I was in Mexico a couple years ago before the pandemic, and we walked into, I guess, a ceramic shop. And I wanted a ceramic lizard. And outside was this Mexican gentleman. And he goes, come over here and buy some of my Mexican crap. And I will tell you what, we went to that store. There were gazillion stores and setups where we could buy that exact same stuff.
Yeah.
Probably cheaper. But because he was so awesome with, come and buy my Mexican crap, it was like, yeah, you got it. We'll buy from you.
Was there
great story?
Was there a language barrier and he didn't realize crap was a negative
term? No, he spoke really great English. This was his way of of endearing himself to us. It was just awesome.
That's funny.
Yeah. And anytime, actually, that lizard is lying by our fireplace. It's broken. I hit it with the vacuum cleaner, but we're not getting rid of it because that has a story behind it.
Yeah.
That was our Mexican crap.
Your Mexican crap lizard. That's great. Yep. That's wonderful. Yep.
So yeah, you're right. The story, that's part of the buying experience. It's not just go in and get, you know, the lizard. Mm-hmm. You could find any of those lizards anywhere in Mexico. It was kind of the thing, like mm-hmm. those little frogs you find.
Yeah.
This one was special.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's part of it. When you're on vacation and you're having a good time and an experience, I never understood getting souvenirs as a kid because it was always ingrained in me that I could get that at Walmart or I could get that at the store for half the price back home.
Right. But, you sure could.
Like, yes, you could. But it's the t-shirt's not going to say, you know, the place you're at or some symbol or something that you'll wear and kind of enjoy wearing that. And remember, oh, that was a good memory. My parents never understood that concept. And we grew up with not a lot of money. So it was probably an excuse, too, to not pay, you know, an exorbitant price on a T-shirt, which, you know, I get. If I were in that same boat, I'd be saying probably whatever I needed to as well to my child to not have them begging for souvenirs left and right. But as an adult, I like getting souvenirs. I like getting a T-shirt or a sweatshirt or something or a hat from where I visited, because in the winter, the rest of the year, I can put that on and go, I remember that was a fun time. And it's an emotional uplift. It's a positive. It's not about the price of the T-shirt. It's about the experience and kind of something from that place that brings you back. Something I didn't get till later. But
if you have the means to do it and spend $50 on a T-shirt that really is only worth $1.
Yeah.
It's just that experience of, you know what, this was just one of the greatest days I've had on vacation. And this is a trinket or a memento to help me remember that. It's worth it. You know, yeah. If you have the means to make that happen. If you don't, it's a whole other story. And that's okay. Yeah. But I guarantee that lizard probably costs 3 times the amount it should have.
Sure.
But it's lasted, even mm-hmm. though it's broken in half right now, it's sitting out there and it has a great story to tell.
What I don't understand when it comes to souvenirs is getting a souvenir at a really weird type shady place that really is not so much connected with the trip, say mm-hmm. a gas station in Southern Georgia or a gas station in Northern Florida. Stop into any of those gas stations in that general vicinity and you're going to walk into a souvenir shop of what's called in the infomercials useless ivory trinkets. And it's tons of things made out of either real or fake ivory or glass. And it's just random shit. It's like a puppy carved out of ivory that you're getting when you're filling up in this shady gas station. And it smells of urine on the floor, but there's like 10 aisles of ivory trinkets. And you could get a puppy, you could get a fire truck, you could get whatever the fuck you want carved out of ivory. And I don't understand that concept of who's buying these things. Or it's kind of in the middle of nowhere. Nobody's vacationing here on this stretch of road. It's on the way to something. Why would I pick that up along the way? And it doesn't look
like... Who are these people who are buying this? And are they buying it for themselves? Are these Christmas gifts that we're going to get in a month?
The only thing I can think of is like some of the locals in some of these really backwoods, methed out areas is that they're buying them because there's no other civilization or stores anywhere around. So Christmas around that place has got to be fun because you're just getting trinkets from the gas station. Carvings of all sorts of random shit. Is what they had at the gas station this year. You got the kitten that's playing with the ball while being violated by a lizard. That's a weird one. I haven't seen that one before. But those are some of the strangest places in my travels to find shit. It's an area I try to have enough gas at to pass through and not stop. But that area, Southern Georgia into Northern Florida, is fucking weird. There's another thing. It's not a trinket, but there's these billboards that I watch for. And it's for some religious extreme organization that there's one that has like Jesus armed up with like fucking machine guns and machetes. What? And there's a nuclear bomb going off in the background and there's zombies walking. And he's like Superman. it's fucking weird. And then there's another one where there's another one where it's literally like Walking Dead zombies on the billboard, and it's about, you know, save yourself. And then, and I always forget what the website is, but it's very, and these billboards have been up for years. If you Google it, other people have found them too. And there's pictures of them online. They're the most bizarre use of advertising that I've ever seen. And they're creepy and weird.
This is in Georgia and Florida.
This is like, if you're going towards Orlando, whatever the highway is, that takes you out of Southern Georgia into Florida. It's right in
that. Oh, that's great. That's right, exactly where my mom lives.
It's literally the Florida, Georgia line area that has this sort of shit in it. So
God, I'll have to look this up.
Yeah. It's great fun. I always try to take pictures as we drive that. It's an interesting area.
Oh my God. I'm looking at it right now. It's iwillbeback.org.
Okay, let's go there. I've always been like, what is the website? And there's usually no service. Oh my God,
I'm still in control, .. And there's military and yeah, it's iwillbeback.org.
I will be.
Isn't that what Arnold Schwarzenegger said?
I'll be back. It's not right. It's on GoDaddy. It's like you can't. There's nothing there.
Well, and there's another one that's coming up. I will be back soon.org.
Maybe that expired and they had to get a new one.
Yeah, I bet you're right.
Site can't be reached. So they spend the money on the billboards, but they don't spend the money on keeping the website alive.
Yes, you are correct, because I will be back soon.org is the address I'm on.
Yeah.
But there are signs to the right on the website that say I will be back. .org. So yes, they had an original website, probably lost it, and then they had to open a new one. Wow.
So you just have these billboards that lead to nowhere that are just fucked up. So yeah.
Wow.
Good times. Good times. What else we got today?
Okay. My husband's stepmom is the absolute worst. I've known him for 10 years. And we've been together for 4. She is one of those people that believes she's always right. When my husband and I decided to have a baby, we were absolutely thrilled. We tried for 2 months and we were lucky enough to conceive our amazing son. While I was pregnant, my mother-in-law behind our backs told everyone she could that I was just his sex toy.
Oh my God.
She said he could do better than me and that I was a gold digger. Worst of all, she said that I tricked him into becoming pregnant by getting off birth control and not telling him. I called her out on it, though. I told her that we were getting married, I had my own job, and that we had actually planned this pregnancy. And guess what, lady? It takes two to tango. He was more than welcome to his own birth control options if he didn't want to have a baby. I poked a hole right through her made-up story. Husband and I are almost 4 years in and happier than ever. What? Why? What? You know, we talk about mother-in-laws a lot. I just, why can't you let go?
I'm curious, when these sort of dynamics come up, what is the relationship of the son with the mother? What's going on there? What's being said when a daughter-in-law is not around?
Yeah.
Because sometimes, you know, you just have an off-the-rails mother-in-law that is saying crazy shit. But sometimes I feel like there's something fueling it as well. Is the son fully rejecting this bullshit? Or is he kind of keeping mother at an arm's length and giving her a little, yeah, you know, well, that's how it worked out. And not really rebuking her ridiculous claims. Because what you really need to do in that situation is rebuke her ridiculous claims and put her in a place of, look, either you get your shit together or I'm not communicating with you, because this is not appropriate. It's not going to be healthy for either of us. So figure it out. Or I just wonder, because sometimes people will change depending on who they're talking to keep that other person happy or whatever. I don't know the word I'm looking for, but there may be something like that going on. And I hope they're happy, but not healthy.
Well, and it's about setting those boundaries. If your wife comes to you and says your stepmom or mom is saying horrific things that aren't true, we need to do something about this. You need to, as the son, say to your mom, this is my wife, this is my girlfriend, whatever she is. And you're either going to have to deal with it or you can't be in our lives. I don't like how you're treating my significant other.
Yeah. And if the relationship is good and the two people seem to be very happy and the other is not like some drug dealer or something that's, you know, going to lead to a very downward spiral or they're into something really dark that's not going to be good for everybody. If they're just happy individuals that are fairly balanced in their life, why do you care? Why, you know, if they're happy and it's working out, it's not your relationship to be had. Why would you try and tear that apart from somebody that does appear to be happy, that's not with a dangerous person?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, isn't that what we want? We want our family members to be happy and healthy and content with their lives. If this gentleman is excited to be with his wife and they're having a baby, why do you need to come up with all of these stories? Why do you need to cast that kind of negativity on their lives?
Yeah.
I just don't get it. Why create drama where there isn't any?
Does that feed something? Are they sleeping better at night by doing that? Because my guess I would feel as if I were speaking out of turn, but they probably don't even realize or feel that they're speaking out of turn. If I were to say something like that, it takes one thing to say that shit directly. That's scary. Yeah. But if you're just saying it to your friends of you're being kind of judgy because everybody can be that way. Maybe you don't really like the person, but there's really nothing there to, you know, indict them on something. But you're like, yeah, you know, it seems like this person's doing this or that. That's one thing. And then if it got back to that person, I would feel fucking awful. I would bury my head in the sand and probably really avoid being near that person for a long time because I would be so embarrassed of being caught saying something like that.
Mortified.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, oh my God, you know what? I shouldn't have been talking that way. I am so sorry. I'm a horrible person. Whatever. Just, I can't imagine like actively doing this.
I think that's where we come back to. They're not feeling that way. They don't have that voice in their head saying that was wrong or the reaction of being horrified or embarrassed. It just doesn't exist. It's not part of the language that their mind or their emotions deal with. And if you don't have that, you don't know what you're missing. You don't know that that's not it. I think a lot of people rely on social cues to get through life and try to mimic them because they're missing something. And that's got to be really difficult. And you ultimately kind of feel bad for somebody like that. But at the same point, if I were in that situation, I really need to learn social cues better. If I'm missing this and it obviously appears wrong and people are having this adverse reaction, I need to learn more of what do I need to learn and put some time and effort at so I don't do this to people because there's something that's not clicking in me that should be doing that. But I can probably avoid this if I just kind of grasp what's I'm learning is right and wrong.
Absolutely. But that also means that, you know, you're taking a look at who you are and what you're doing to other people.
Yeah.
As we've noticed, that's not a thing with everybody.
It's a bridge too far for most.
God.
But that's not going to go any further than that. But I'm glad they're happy. And hopefully mom-in-law stays at a distance or you have boundaries that keep her away. That's going to wrap up today's episode. We want to hear your stories, so please do write them in or call them in. Go to crazyfampod.com, and you can share your story right there. Or call toll-free 833-CRAY-FAM, 833-272-9326, 833-272-9326 to share your stories with us. We'd love to hear them. Until next time, for Stacy, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening to My Crazy Family.
My crazy.
Crazy. Family.
Family.
My
crazy.
Family.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk. Still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.